In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball. Let's
all go to the lobby. Oh, you betcha. It's time for Pass the Popcorn on a Monday afternoon. I just yawned out of sympathy for Alan Adams, who joins us because, my goodness, you've had a bear of a weekend.
It's been something. Yeah, starting with the show on Friday night, I did a performance of Hockey Mom at 7 o'clock Friday night. Did two on Saturday, one at 2 and 1 at 7.
You had two shows Saturday? Oh, I did not know that. Yep. Oh my God!
And then on Sunday morning, I met up with the crew and we had our annual Bangor Drum Slowly fantasy baseball draft,
which was awesome. And as I was saying in the break, you're the favorite to win it this
year. I'm looking
year.
Good. I'm feeling good about where I'm at. And then I raced away from there to a matinee performance of Hockey Mom. And then as soon as I got off stage for that, I started warming up for Ready, Set, Go, the improv show on the set that was at 7 o'clock.
And you also somehow managed to do a show in Southern Maine.
Yes, I was part of, it's funny. No, I was part of the annual pop-up fundraiser for Port Fringe. They were initially scheduled to go back in person this year after a couple of years of a video pivot. And I was going to have to regretfully decline because I'm doing Hockey Mom. Mm. And seriously, like, it was the same day I was finally like, okay, I have to tell them I can't do it. That was when the pivot to video performances, they decided they were going to do one more year of video. And I'm like, well, hell, I can do a video. Like, I couldn't be there for the in-person screening that they did this past weekend, but I was able to contribute my piece. For those who are unfamiliar, their pop-ups are, they basically divvy up a classic script into pieces, distribute those pieces to various groups. Each group does their own thing with that piece, the only requirement being a time limit. In this case, it was 5 minutes or less. You have to use at least one line from the section of script that you were given and tell the story. If you do those three things, they don't really care what else you do. I put something together with the help of my lovely and talented bride, who is a gifted videographer and editor. Having one of those in the house makes this sort of thing very easy.
Yeah.
And so they stitched it together. I still haven't seen the completed product yet. I don't even know when I would have at this point. But it is available online through the portfringe.com website. I'm looking for it's pay what you can. I'm looking forward to checking out a screening sometime in the next couple of days and seeing what my fellow performers have put together. It's been wonderful in the past. Weird, but wonderful. and I expect nothing but the same this time going forward. So, yeah. And in the middle of all that, I saw a bunch of movies, too.
Yeah. Four of them to talk about. I don't even want to know how you did it. I suspect cloning may be involved. But what should we discuss first?
We'll start with the one that... I have not written about this movie yet. I may not, because, you know, I mean, there's only so many hours in the day. It's a sweet little film. It's called Moonshot. It's a sort of teen-oriented romantic comedy that's basically like it's in the near future, and we've colonized Mars, and you've got a young man working as a barista who wants nothing more than to go to Mars. He sneaks his way onto a Mars ship with the reluctant help of a young lady that he encounters at his coffee shop. And then hijinks ensue. I don't need to tell you anything more than that. And frankly, these other movies are going to be more fun to talk about anyway. So, but I will say Moonshot, it's perfectly charming. If you're into that sort of movie, very lighthearted, kind of romantic comedy, and like I said, oriented towards the teens and 20-somethings and whatnot. But as a rom-com guy, as a sci-fi guy, I had a good time watching it, and if you like those things, you will enjoy it too.
All right, I had not heard of Apollo 10 and a half, and I just searched to find out what it's about, and now I'm really intrigued when I see who's involved with this.
Well, and that, it's funny, like I heard you talking to Ty on the way in, and you mentioned that you hadn't heard of this, and I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to talk to Rich about this movie, because it's easily the best movie I saw this weekend. It's called, the full title is Apollo 10 and a Half, A Space Age Childhood, written and directed by Richard Linklater.
Okay, I'm in.
Right? It's a return to rotoscope animation. He's gone to that well a couple of times in the past. He did Waking Life, and he also did A Scanner Darkly, both of which were excellent films. And it's this wonderful combination of all the things that Richard Linklater does well, because he goes back to that sort of, like, I love it when he mines his personal experience for storytelling purposes, whether you're talking about his, you know, his time in high school with Dazed and Confused, or his college days with Everybody Wants Some, or, you know, basically the gamut of human experience with Boyhood. And this time he goes back to his great school days, growing up in the 60s in a suburb of Houston in the shadow of NASA. It's this wonderful slice of life look at, a child growing up in that place and time, sandwiched between this fantastic story about how the young man, the boy's name is Stan, is recruited by NASA for a secret mission. Because they accidentally built the lunar lander too small. And so they needed to test it. They needed to test the concepts, but no one they had could fit in the lander. And so they recruited him to undertake this mission. And so on either side of this wonderfully vivid portrait of suburban life for a kid in the 1960s, you have this fantastical story of him training to become an astronaut. It's so delightful. And for those who are unfamiliar with rotoscoping, it's the animation process wherein animators basically trace over live action film, which it gives it a very unique look. It was just so wonderful. And you're sitting there and you're watching this movie and you're watching this kid. He's growing up with like five brothers and sisters in this like basically instant suburb that popped up outside of Houston. All the families of his neighbors, they're all involved with NASA in somehow, like in some way, shape, or form. Like his dad is like head of shipping and receiving for NASA, some of the other kids, their parents are astronauts or engineers or they work on making the suits or the helmets. Like everybody's involved with the space program. And so it's omnipresent in their lives, much like it was in kind of everybody's life, in the mid to late 60s. And so you're basically watching him, watch TV with his siblings and go to the movies, go to the arcades. And it's all rendered in this wonderfully esoteric, idiosyncratic kind of animation style. Some of the highlights, when he's talking about the popular culture that he consumed, whether it was television shows or movies. And so you get like snippets of these classic TV shows and films that have also been rotoscoped. So they're part of that sort of, the episode of the Beverly Hillbillies where Jethro thought he met aliens. Like you get to see a piece of that rotoscoped, it just like all these little touches that are just so delightful. And again, on the, within the context of the framework of this story of this kid being the actual first person on the moon, although he can't tell anybody, but, and our narrator is Jack Black, over the course of that narration, at one point he makes sure we know that as a child he was a pretty notorious fabulist, and so it is implied that this story is made up, but it's never implicitly stated. So it's probably not true, but it might be, and that sort of ambiguity just ties a little bow around the whole thing. Yeah, it was one of those things where it checks all the boxes of what I love about Richard Linklater's work. And, honestly, like, I don't know that there's anybody better at incorporating his own lived experience into cinematic storytelling. To do so in a manner while also including these other aspects of the world that he's also clearly very interested in, was just a delight. And again, I didn't really know that much about it going in, and it felt like kind of a surprise. Like you would think that if Netflix was, they had we've got a new Richard Linklater movie, let's tell everyone. Right. Nah, we're just going to throw it out there. I'm sure someone will find it. And I did. And I'm glad, because it's excellent. Like excellent, excellent, excellent. Honestly, like And you were the person I thought of when I was watching it, because I don't know that I know anyone who has as much of an affinity for that sort of space race period as you do. And adding in the coming of age elements and all that stuff, I'm like, oh man, Rich Kimball's gonna love this movie.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it now.
Yeah. So So Apollo 10 and a half, cannot recommend it highly enough.
Excellent. We're talking with Alan Adams, of course, of The Main Edge. A couple more movies that you saw in the past week. Where should we go next?
Well, let's go to, I talked about a movie that I can't recommend highly enough. Let's talk about a movie that I can't recommend.
Ooh, man. Okay.
Morbius.
Oh,
yeah. No, it's no good.
No,
it's no good. I think we all kind of suspected it might be no good. But I was not, I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because, again, I am someone who is a ravenous consumer of comic book culture. I grew up reading these comic books, and I was a Marvel kid in the 80s. Morbius as the character had sort of passed his prime at that point. He was very much a 70s phenomenon, but he's still present, so I'm very aware of that character. And the first thing I thought of when I was like, oh, they're making a Morbius movie. Why? Yes, Morbius the Living Vampire. Because sure. It's part of Sony's ongoing effort to somehow craft a Spider-Man adjacent cinematic universe, only, you know, without Spider-Man in it. So they're mining all these different sort of supporting and tertiary characters from the sort of Spider-Man universe. That's how we got two Venom movies. That's how we got this movie. That's how we're going to get a Kraven the Hunter movie, which is happening. As the end credits scene made very abundantly clear, they are clearly angling toward a Sinister Six movie. Like that is clearly the end goal. They're building this sort of roster of anti-heroes / villains to sort of come together. All right. So I guess I have to talk about the movie itself. Stars Jared Leto. So, you know, strike one. But he plays Dr. Michael Morbius, brilliant scientist who is suffering from some sort of never really defined blood disorder that... he has to walk with crutches, and apparently, you know, he's very pale, and and everything hurts or whatever. I don't know, but he has become the world's foremost expert on blood diseases, and so he's searching for a cure for his own condition. A condition, I might add, he has conveniently enough shared with his childhood best friend Milo, who also happens to be the heir to an incredible fortune. And so he has grown up, and he is financing all of Dr. Morbius's research. He grows up to become Matt Smith, best known as a Doctor Who, I think. He's financing it, and Morbius is like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to splice vampire bat genes into human DNA. Maybe that'll do it. And he winds up going out into international waters to experiment on himself because, you know, that's what you do. Experiments. And Rich, he cures himself, kinda, because, you know, he doesn't have that blood disease anymore, but now he's a living vampire.
Yeah, that's not good.
He turns into a monster and he needs to feed on human blood to survive. And if he doesn't have it... In the appropriate amount of time, he goes on a rampage and just sort of haphazardly starts murdering people and eating them. He comes back, tells his buddy, yeah, I kind of fixed it, but it turns you into a monster. It's no good. And his friend's like, oh, I don't care, I'll be a monster. And then we have two living vampires, and it turns into a whole thing, and they fight against each other, and blood-soaked hijinks ensue. It's just so dumb. Like, it would be one thing if it had either A, a sense of humor, or B, better production values. But we're somewhere in this weird muddy middle where it's like, there are some moments where you'll laugh, but I don't know that you're supposed to. And the effects are kind of shoddy. There are like three or four, like, just it's seemingly random moments of like slow-mo, like bullet time things where it's just like, I don't know. I guess they just had, they hired the guy for a certain amount of time. It's like, well, okay, I guess put one here. The characters, such as they are, you don't care about anybody. Jared Leto, I will say, Jared Leto's a lot less than he usually does in this movie. I mean, that's not saying much, because he's still Letoing pretty hard. But I mean, it's not like he's like doing the weird shuffle he was doing in The Little Things, or the inexplicable accent he was doing in House of Gucci. But it's still very much a Jared Leto joint. So for whatever that's worth, the supporting cast, clearly talented people, maybe regretting their choices. I suppose, you know, once, if the check has enough commas in it, you can just be like, yeah, all right, I guess I'll play a different vampire, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at the end, we get the sort of attempt to tie it all together, in a way that, feels both, completely expected and utterly lazy. So, we'll see how it goes going forward. I don't have high hopes, but, you know, that movie made $40 million at the box office this weekend, so I'm guessing we're probably going to see another one. Because, Rich, it turns out that the only thing that will get people to go to the movies these days is superheroes or supervillains or super whatevers. And again, I say this as someone who has a deep affection for all this stuff. It's kind of, that much like this movie, it kind of sucks.
Well, the last movie we'll talk about, I'm very curious to hear what you think of The Bubble, because I think I'm at that point where I'm unsure how I feel about Judd Apatow, because he's had some hits, but he's had some pretty big misses. And outside of the great documentary he did on Gary Shandling, not a lot of huge success in the last few years.
Yeah, like, it's an interesting thing, The Bubble, because I liked it more than I think a fair number of my critical brethren did, but I thought it was just, okay. Like, it's okay. It's a movie that, the big thing I think that you need to ask yourself going into this movie is, are you ready for a movie that is basically making light of the early days of the pandemic? Mm. Like, are you ready for that? Because I know some people probably aren't. I would be, and I think that's totally understandable. And it's tough to think about making light of some of these things. The basic gist is a group of actors are sequestered in a luxury hotel in the English countryside so that they could come together and film the sixth movie in the blockbuster Cliff Beasts franchise. Ostensibly inspired by the real life attempts by the Jurassic World people to film while in the early days of the pandemic. They sequestered together in a hotel and all that stuff. It's one of those movies where, I don't know, the creative team and the cast and all of this, it's like, man, like, I bet you folks could have made a really good movie. Instead, you made this.
Oh.
And again, like I said, it's not terrible. I didn't find it to be terrible. Like, I thought it was okay. So anyway, this cast of characters descends on this hotel. Our sort of centerpiece, such as it is, it's very much an ensemble piece, but I guess our lead is probably this actress named Carol, played by Karen Gillan, who has been asked back to rejoin the franchise after skipping the previous film in order to make a critically reviled passion project of hers. I probably shouldn't spoil it, but her movie was called Jerusalem Rising, and it was a movie where she was supposed to be half Palestinian, half Israeli. And she brings the two sides together to fight aliens.
Okay.
Weirdly, that wasn't well received. So she's back to, into the fold for the franchise. She goes. The production is being overseen by a producer named Gavin, played by the wonderful Peter Serafinowicz. We get to meet the cast. We've got I got to pull up my list because I want to make sure, because there's a lot of people in this movie. So you've got Dustin Mulray and Lauren Van Chance, played by David Duchovny and Leslie Mann. They're a former slash current slash former on again off again kind of couple that are in the film together. You've got a relentlessly positive and maybe cult leader, Sean Knox, played by Keegan-Michael Key.
I like that.
You've got an angry comic relief guy, Howie Frangopoulos, played by Goose Khan, who is gold every single time he's on screen. He might be, if he's not the best thing in this movie, he's close to it.
Wow.
You've got an addled sort of method weirdo and Oscar winner named I can't believe I forgot this name because it's hilarious. Dieter Bravo, played by Pedro Pascal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Like I'm talking, like we've got a very talented group here. And we also have a TikTok star with no acting experience who they've brought in because of her massive global fan base named Crystal Chris. We all know that Judd Apatow's not afraid of a little nepotism. It's his daughter, Iris Apatow, plays that part.
Oh, right.
And Leslie Mann's his wife. So, yeah. You know, we got this whole thing going. And the director is Fred Armisen. he plays Darren Eigen, a Sundance darling who's made literally one film before that he made on his iPhone while he was working at Home Depot. And now he is at the reins of a massive, big budget thing. And we've got a limited staff at the hotel with some wonderful character actors, including Marina Bakalova, who was so good in the Borat sequel. And basically hijinks ensue because they're all trapped in this hotel together. And then they go to the set and we get to see the sort of juxtaposition of like the sort of effects. We see them, set against the effects that are happening. And then we get to see them, you know, basically running in front of a green screen. And we sort of move back and forth between that. And as it goes on and they go into reshoots and, overtime and all this stuff, it starts to become clear, they don't really want to make this movie anymore. But as it turns out, they might not really have much of a choice. And so there, that complication arises as well. Look, it's fine. Like, it has moments, for sure. Frankly, the better moments are the ones that take place, the sort of interpersonal dynamics that we see under the roof of the hotel. You would think a film that made one of its aims sort of satirizing Hollywood would have made those moments a little bit more engaging. They don't really quite click. Like, I get it. Like, I see what they're trying to do, but it just doesn't really work as fully as you might want it to. But the stuff in the hotel, like, you get to see a lot of sort of subplots play out, a lot of two- and three-person sort of scenes, which I assume was a deliberate choice to sort of mirror the kinds of things that were being made during the pandemic, that sort of that way to sort of isolate small groups of people in order to maximize safety. I will say we get a number of TikTok dance videos featuring the entire cast interspersed throughout. They might be my favorite part because, look, who doesn't want to see David Duchovny do TikTok dances? I didn't know I did until I did. Sure. And then I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is definitely for me. And then there's some pretty heavy-handed, low-hanging fruit COVID stuff. Like, there are scenes where it's like you get to see people, like, you know, wiping down groceries and like aggressive, like, nasal swabbing and rigorously enforced social distance jokes and stuff like that. And it's just like I get it. I get what you're doing, but it's like, I'm rarely a too soon guy. Mm. Feels like it might be a little too soon.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate the desire to sort of take the power away from that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, those memories are tough for a lot of us. And I get the desire to find the humor there. I just don't know if people are ready to do that. And when they are ready, maybe the jokes need to be a little bit better. All that being said, and I know, like, it sounds like I'm being harsher. This review sounds harsher than I actually felt about the movie because I had a perfectly good time watching it. Like, there was stuff that didn't work, but ultimately the reality is you put this many talented people together, like, it's hard to make something that's actively bad. Mm. Could it have been better? Absolutely. 100%. I wish it was better. I wish they had taken all of these people and made something that wasn't, an effort to, deflate the whole pandemic situation and turn that into something that we can look back on with humor, because uh, I don't I don't necessarily agree that we should look back on it with humor. You know, nothing's off limits and whatnot. And, you know, maybe I'll feel differently about it down the road. But ultimately, there are enough pieces, whether we're talking about Goose Khan, who is so good, Pedro Pascal, who is basically drug-addled out of his mind throughout this entire film, and is just a staggering, like, mumbling delight. You know, there's enough here for me to recommend people watch it. But just go into it knowing that it doesn't all work, and some of it actively doesn't work. And, you know, your mileage may vary as to where that line is for yourself. For me, like, I mean, basically, it's a C plus. Like, it's a 3 out of 5. You know, C plus, B minus, like, perfectly enjoyable film to watch. You know, but it's not the sort of thing that that I think anyone needs to actively seek out.
All right, Alan Adams, 4 of them for you on Pass the Popcorn this week. Go get some rest.
Oh man, I'm still very tired.
I bet you are. Well, you go home, chill. No show until what, Wednesday?
Yep.
Just a paper to get out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's what I will be going home to do from here. That's what I spent my day doing. I'll spend my night doing that. But tomorrow, I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, enjoy that, and we'll see you right here Wednesday.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Alan Adams talking movies on Downtown.